When practicing Dharma, we have to be self-reliant, for no one else can help us. Study the foundations well and start practicing. Whether we excel or not depends on the law of karma. We do something, and it results in a certain outcome. If we are lazy, we get the result of someone who is lazy. If we are unwise, we get the result of someone who is unwise. So practice until you know the main principles. Don't be stupid and believe in superstitions. Be diligent, and we will get the result of someone who walks the right path. The most important point is to study well about the foundation of mindfulness. Once we understand how to practice mindfulness, we have to keep practicing with diligence. Then there's a chance we will be enlightened. Enlightenment is real, not just an ideal which lures us into practicing in order to be liberated. Some people with wrong view say enlightenment is not real, but just the Buddha's trick to make people do good and not dare do evil. They see the Buddha as a deceiver. If we practice Dharma, we will know that each sentence, each word from the Buddha is genuine. It's impossible for an ordinary person filled with defilements to produce such refined teachings. The refined teachings also include those of pure beings, such as his enlightened disciples. Sometimes the teaching of a stream emperor, and not an enlightened one, with firm understanding of Dharma practice, can make a listener attain the non-returner stage, the third stage of enlightenment. There was once a queen who could not leave the palace to attend the Buddha's sermon. She sent her servant to go listen in her place so that the servant can relay the teaching. The queen's name was Samavadi. After the servant listened to the Buddha, she returned to the palace. The queen invited her to sit on the pedestal, higher than the queen's own seating, and asked her to relay what the Buddha taught. Although the queen did not meet the Buddha, the Dharma relayed by the servant was genuine, because the servant, after hearing the Buddha's sermon, attained the first stage of enlightenment. The queen, after hearing the sermon from the servant, attained the third stage of enlightenment. Just listening would not have resulted in such an outcome. The queen must have also practiced mindfulness in the past. So, we listen to Dharma, and should begin to practice. Practice Dharma for Dharma's sake, and the result will be worthy of Dharma. There's no need to ask anyone for confirmation, for the mind will have no doubt whether the outcome is genuine or not. The mind will know on its own. Why did the Buddha say that a person of ordinary prudence will know on his own whether he has attained enlightenment or not, and at which level of attainment he's at? How can he know? He can from what defilements he still have. At each level of purity, certain defilements are extinguished for good, while certain defilements remain. The ability to distinguish which defilements are extinguished and which remain is a type of wisdom, the knowledge and vision of deliverance. Each person knows on his own when he attains the noble path and the noble fruits. The mind enters absorption concentration, and attainment of the noble path and noble fruits occur. The mind then recedes from full concentration and reviews what has just happened, which defilement is eradicated and which still remains. This ability to know on one's own is an important wisdom. Now the problem of our generation is the fact that our Dharma practice is not rigorous. We practice and then we think, we speculate. When an unusual phenomenon arises, Some people think they have reached the first stage or the second stage of enlightenment. Sometimes their teacher gives confirmation, and then later defilements return. Both teacher and students are mistaken. When you practice, don't go around asking too many people. Assess your own self. Keep practicing, and you will understand Dharma more and more, until finally you can assess whether you have reached enlightenment or not. And if not, at which level of purity you are, at which defilements are eradicated, and which still remains. So many people practice Dharma incorrectly. They over-focus until the mind reaches a passive state, and declare that they have attained a certain stage of enlightenment. They come to me for affirmation, but I send them all back to get affirmation from their own teachers. Some said they already asked their teacher, and received affirmation that they have reached the third stage of enlightenment. However, sensual desire still arises. So I said in that case, there's no need to ask at all. For if they have reached the stage of a non-returner, sensual desire would be completely eradicated. If sensual desire still arises, then they haven't yet reached the third stage of enlightenment. There's no need to ask me, for I'm not an authority to give out certification. Go and observe each his own self. Last Friday, there was an elderly man who has been practicing Dharma for many decades. He was ordained at one point at Wat Thep Sirin and was Jao Khanor's pupil. He's very good at concentration meditation. When he meditates, he looks at the arising and passing of states of absorption. He sees thought conception, and sustained thought arises, and sees the mind dwells in it. Once aware of this, the mind lets go and joy arises. Aware of joy and joy passes away. Happiness arises. Aware of happiness and happiness passes away. The mind becomes equanimous. His question to me was, I have been able to do this for a long time now, developing wisdom in absorptions, seeing each stage arise and pass away. How can I develop further? I replied, observe carefully. When the mind enters different levels of concentration until it becomes equanimous, which is from the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th absorptions, it's happy and content. It's joyous and then stuck. The mind develops wisdom for just a little, and then gets stuck in the void, stuck with equanimity. It is filled with happiness and tranquility. It is stuck in happiness, and is reluctant to leave that to be aware of objects of consciousness and develop wisdom. The mind is lazy. Observe and see that it is lazy and not developing wisdom, as you mentioned earlier. It develops wisdom a little, and then curls back to sleep. If you die right there, you'll be reborn as a Brahman. To correct this, when the mind exits samadhi, observe the body right away. Since this man's mind is very strong, he needs to mentally tear the body up into pieces. Tear the hair, scoop out the eyes, tear the skin, dissemble the bones into pieces. This is concentration meditation, but it forces the mind to work. Keep tearing until the body disintegrates, and the mind becomes concentrated on the mind itself. This time it's no longer lazy. The mind is concentrated like an experienced soldier who has fought in a war and has come back to rest. It's not lazy. Once he enters absorption, wisdom can be further developed. In absorptions, when the mind develops wisdom, it shifts slightly. Observe this shift. Then the man said, there's no thinking involved when developing wisdom in absorption. This is correct. There is no thinking. Observing phenomena arise and then shift already displays the three characteristics of existence. But there is no labeling the phenomena because there is no thinking. We cannot say that it is craving, anger, delusion, happiness, suffering, or wholesomeness, but just see that something arises and then passes away. The man said that the mind shifts a little. I said yes, because it peeks out of absorption to observe phenomena. He said, in that case, it's like the mind is distracted. I said yes, there's a fine line between the mind that is developing wisdom and the mind that is distracted. The only difference between the two is that a mind that is distracted is an active mind with no awareness, while a mind developing wisdom is an active mind with awareness. Therefore, if someone is proficient in concentration meditation, he can develop wisdom while meditating. After exiting absorption, don't look at the mind because it's empty. Look directly at the body. Begin by thinking. There are several methods. Some look at the hair, seeing it as impure and loathsome, impermanent, suffering and not self. Look at the hair, nail, tooth, or skin, one at a time. Some people use the body dismembering method, tearing out the arms, legs, ears, and eyes. This may seem gruesome, but actually it's not. It's a trick to stimulate the mind to be aware of the body, seeing that, in the end, the body is really just an object, an element. Once the mind contemplates this way, it's on the right track. Some people who are good at concentration meditation, once they exit the meditation, they contemplate on the body. They don't need to dissemble the parts. Instead, they burn it in their mind, just like grazing at fire, using fire to burn the body until it turns to dust and disintegrates in the mind. The mind then becomes concentrated on the mind. At this point, sometimes enlightenment occurs. This is because the mind covertly develops wisdom of the delicate kind. This is the contemplation style of people inept in absorptions. If we cannot enter absorptions, practice the way we are capable of. These days, it's difficult to find people who can enter absorptions. It's the generation of people with short concentration span, like being poor with no asset to invest in a business. Making small profit isn't easy. The mind that cannot reach serene concentration is a poor mind. One has to constantly accumulate wisdom, one moment at a time. It's like living on a tight budget. Keep practicing and one day, you may be enlightened. The resultant purity of enlightenment from momentary concentration is the same as those from serene concentration. The difference is in the style of practice. For people who can enter absorptions, once they are enlightened, sometimes they gain threefold knowledge, six higher knowledges, or four analytical knowledges. For people like us with low assets, we use momentary concentration to see the three characteristics of existence of physical and mental phenomena. Once enlightened, we will automatically gain the first stage of absorption. This type of enlightenment, where the mind has to constantly be mindful without much rest, is called a pure insight meditator. Other type of enlightened one are called the master of the three knowledges and the master of the six super knowledges. All types of enlightened one have the same purification. So don't feel disappointed. Even if we cannot enter deep concentration, we can use momentary concentration to read our own mind. The mind is happy, know it. The mind is sad, know it. The mind is wholesome, know it. The mind has craving, anger, or delusion, know it. Know all things as they are. The mind is lost through the eye door, know it. The mind is lost through the ear door, nose door, tongue door, or body door, know it. The mind is lost in thinking through the mind door, know it. The mind with fixed focus is also lost through the mind door, know it. Learn to know one moment at a time. In the end, the mind will gain knowledge and conclude that whatever arises naturally passes away naturally. Most enlightened ones walk this path, not through absorptions. Don't feel disappointed that we cannot enter absorptions. Be mindful. Remember that mindfulness is required in all situations and at all times. This is the foundation of mindfulness, to be mindful of the body and mind. How to be mindful of the body? This is not hard. We are breathing out, know it. We are breathing in, know it. Don't fix focus at the breath. If we focus at the breath, this is no longer practicing mindfulness, but rather concentration meditation, which is stressful. Just be aware naturally. Breathe out and know it. Breathe in and know it. Stand and know it. Sit and know it. Lie down and know it. Move and know it. Stay still and know it. Keep being aware with a natural mind. It's difficult because our mind is not natural. It is tainted with desire. We want to practice, to know, to see, to become, to possess, to excel. We have all kinds of desires. Once desire arises, we start to control ourselves. This is the extreme form of self-control, called self-torture. At the beginning, we all have desire, and we fix focus. Just know that, in theory, this is not good. It's difficult to develop further. Good samadhi is a samadhi where the mind focuses within the body. The mind is upright and stable within our own body. Be diligent. Practice using a contemplation object, which we are good at. The contemplation objects are all the same in that they act like bait. Our mind is the fish, while the objects are bait. Some use puttow as bait. Some use namapata as bait. Some use sammar arahang as bait. Some use puttang soranang gochami as bait. Some use the breath as bait. Some use the stomach movements as bait. Our aim is not to stay with the stomach, but rather with the mind. If we cannot be aware of our mind, this is lost in being aware. Lost in being aware is when the mind is deluded and is unable to see the phenomena at present. The mind is lost, unaware, filled with craving. It wants to be good, to practice, to get good results. Lots of defilements infiltrate the Dharma practice. Therefore, if we don't read the mind carefully, we may be fooled by defilements. We may be serving desire and thinking that we are practicing to eradicate it. So observe carefully when we practice. Stay with the object of contemplation, whether it's putto or the breath. In fact, any object is the same in the sense that it acts like bait, and the mind like the fish. Each of us is a different kind of fish. Some fish eat plants, while others eat meat. Some eat carcass of other fish, while others eat live prey. Each fish is different. Similarly, each of our mind likes a different kind of bait. My mind likes to use in-breath put and out-breath toe as bait. Others may like to use movements of the body as bait. The body moves. Be aware. The body is still. Be aware. Any bait will do because our target is the mind. So choose a bait that is right for you. Don't copy others. Observe yourselves. Which object of contemplation makes mindfulness arise often, use it. Don't use an object of contemplation which switches off the mind, making it unaware. That is unacceptable. Don't choose it, for it's dangerous. So, the meditation object which the mind likes, and which makes mindfulness arise often, is good and suitable for us. When I breathe in put and breathe out toe, Sometimes the mind becomes lost in thinking. It forgets the breath. It forgets putto. The breath is corporeality, while reciting putto is mentality. One is the body and the other is the mind. When we are not mindful, sometimes we forget the breath. This is forgetting the body. Sometimes we forget to recite putto. This is forgetting the thought we intend to think of and escaping to think of something else. If we are skillful at contemplating on a certain meditation object, when the mind is lost from that object for just one moment, mindfulness will arise. We will know that the mind was deluded. The duration of delusion then becomes shorter and shorter. In the beginning, we are lost once a day, which is from when we wake up until we go to sleep. Then we are lost and then aware every 2 hours. With constant practice, the duration becomes every 5 minutes awareness arises. With lots of training, the mind is then aware automatically every time it is lost, without any intention to do so. So, let's contemplate and be aware of the mind. The mind forgets the object, know it. The mind chooses a different object, know it. Once we are able to be aware of our own mind, we are successful in catching the fish. But once we catch this fish, let's not hold it still, for it will die quickly. After catching it, let's be brave and observe it while it swims around. Just know which direction it's going. It swims north, know it. It swims south, know it. It dives, know it. It swims to the surface, know it. We will become skillful at knowing this fish without confining or controlling it. It can no longer escape because it's within our range. When we care for a fish and put it in a round basin, wherever it swims, we see it. It cannot escape, so there's no need to tie it down, no need to catch it with a bait. We see its every move. Therefore, let's practice. When the mind is happy, know it. When it's sad, know it. When it's calm, know it. When it's distracted, know it. Be aware constantly, and we can grasp hold of our mind. Once we have the mind, let's not force it to be still. When the mind is influenced by an object of consciousness, it reacts, and there is happiness, suffering, wholesomeness, unwholesomeness, or other fabrications. Be aware. Be aware of fabrications of the mind, but don't fabricate it. Most Dharma practitioners are fabricators. They fabricate the body, they fabricate the mind. Normal breathing becomes constricted. Normal walking becomes unnatural. Whatever they do, which used to be easy, turns into something difficult. These people are professional fabricators. The mind, which is used to sometimes thinking good and other times thinking bad, is forced to not think. This is unnatural, for the function of the mind is to think and fabricate. Forcing it to not think or fabricate is frustrating. Besides, it will not succeed because it is unnatural. When we light fire, we know that its property is generating heat. We cannot meditate and make fire cold. It's impossible. The property of fire is to generate heat, therefore it's hot. The property of the mind is to know, to think, to fabricate. Therefore it knows, thinks and fabricates. We cannot force it otherwise. We just have to be aware of its craftiness. We think that our mind is brilliant, great, skillful, but in reality it isn't. It is led by defilements every day without us knowing. We think we are superior, that no one can control us, but in actuality we aren't. We let craving drag us by the nose without realizing it. We are enslaved by defilements. It orders us to go see a movie and we go. It orders us to court a girl and we do it. It orders us to steal and we do it. we do whatever it tells us to do. Therefore, we must train to observe our own mind, using a meditation object. The mind fabricates happiness, know it. It fabricates suffering, know it. It fabricates goodness, know it. It fabricates badness, know it. But just don't fabricate the mind. An example of this is, when we try not to fabricate the mind, the act of trying to not fabricate is in fact a fabrication. We become the fabricator. It's natural for the mind to fabricate. But when we fabricate the mind, because we want to be good, that is our ignorance, because we are in fact inviting suffering to ourselves. That's why I say, be aware of the mind's fabrications, but don't fabricate it yourself. Every practitioner, without exception, fabricates this way. This is what it means to be deceived by illusion, the illusion of defilements. They trick us. For example, when we want to be good, we force ourselves into it, and that's already fabrication. Some people force themselves to change. If someone sees themselves as quick-tempered, they try to build themselves into a person who doesn't get angry. Even practicing calmness meditation is a kind of fabrication. It is a mental fabrication. However, if one practices calmness meditation to develop strength for insight meditation, then it is beneficial. But if one practices calmness meditation and the mind just becomes still, passive, and lazy, then it is not good. The mind will become hungry, hungry for a happiness, hungry for the peace of concentration. Then, when practicing, instead of focusing on seeing the three characteristics of existence, one observes them only a little and then retreats into stillness. That is not good. At that point, one is simply fabricating meditative absorption to satisfy the mind's craving for peace. Instead of seeing reality, we are manipulating the mind to be calm. We must recognize the mind's fabrications, be aware of them, but don't fabricate them ourselves. If we fabricate the mind, what will happen? The easiest way to notice is that the mind will feel tight, constricted, and tense. If, while practicing, the mind feels tight, pressured, or tense in our chest, that means we've already fallen into fabrication. What kind of fabrication? The fabrication of goodness, not badness. Ordinary people tend to fabricate bad mental states, while practitioners tend to fabricate good ones. But whether it's good or bad, it's still fabrication. The root of both is the same, ignorance. It all comes from intention, whether good or bad. So, be aware. Be aware of the mind's fabrications. For example, when sitting in meditation, breathing, if the mind becomes restless, simply know that it is restless. Don't interfere with it. Just recognize that the mind has fabricated restlessness. Let it be its own business. Keep breathing. If the mind becomes peaceful, know that it is peaceful. The mind has fabricated that peace. Let it be its own business. But if, when sitting in meditation, we want peace and try to force the mind to be peaceful, that's already fabricating out of greed. That's fabrication. Don't do it. Nowadays, people say, don't do it. I don't even know what that really means, but I hear young people saying it all the time. One time, a group of kids met me and said, oh wow, we get to see Luang Po in real life. What kind of language is that? If they saw a dead Luang Po, would he be walking around on the street? Strange expressions. So, don't fabricate the mind. Whatever the mind fabricates, just know it. If it fabricates happiness, know it. If it fabricates suffering, know it. If it fabricates wholesome states, know it. If it fabricates greed, anger, or delusion, know it. Just know things as they are. And what will we see? We will see that every mental state is impermanent. Each one is beyond control. Each one is not self. The truth is, the mind cannot be controlled. But those who enter deep meditative absorption for long periods, even for eons, can become deluded, believing that the mind can be controlled. This is why Brahmas and other celestial beings often fall into wrong view, because their minds feel so stable and unchanging. They don't see the subtle breaks in continuity, so they mistakenly believe the mind is permanent, a single, unchanging entity. These beings develop strong concentration but lack wisdom, so they don't see the three characteristics. Having never heard or practiced the teachings of the Buddha or the enlightened disciples, they end up stuck in a kind of blank, unmoving state, just sitting there. And why do they get stuck like that? Because they fabricated the mind into stillness. Do you see? If we become aware of the mind's fabrications, wisdom will arise. We will see that all mental states are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. But if we fabricate the mind and succeed in doing so, we might become a Brahma or some celestial being, but we will fall into wrong view. We won't see impermanence. We will believe that the mind is stable, that it is us, that it can be controlled. So, concentration meditation has both benefits and dangers. When we hear the Dharma, we should reflect and observe. Every kind of mind, whether in jhana or outside of jhana, is subject to the three characteristics. The mind keeps fabricating on its own. It cannot be controlled. Just watch it. If the mind becomes restless, know that it is restless. If it becomes calm, know that it is calm. Just be aware. If you sit and feel bored, know that you feel bored. If you sit and feel lazy, know that you feel lazy. If you sit for a long time and feel irritated, know that you feel irritated. If you sit and cannot find peace, and then feel frustrated, know that you feel frustrated. The mind fabricates on its own. That's okay. Just observe. If you do this, you'll begin to see the three characteristics. But if you force the mind into a certain state, you won't see the three characteristics. You will see only ugliness. You will just experience stillness, emptiness, and blankness. Do you understand? When practicing meditation, always stay aware of the mind's fabrications. For example, when breathing, using putto as a mantra, if the mind wanders, what is it fabricating? It is fabricating restlessness. Just know that the mind is restless. No need to fix it. Just know. Some might breathe, use putto, and then the mind wanders. They become restless, and then they get annoyed by it. Why is my mind so restless? Why won't it stop thinking? Then, anger arises. Just know that you are annoyed. Don't interfere. Know things as they are. Don't fabricate the mind to be good, to be happy, to be peaceful. Whatever the mind is, just know it as it is. If you do this, you will see that the mind is subject to the three characteristics. That's all for today's Dharma talk. Even just this much takes people lifetimes to practice. When I studied with my teachers, some of the Dharma teachings I learned took 22 years to understand. Some teachings were so difficult that I had to contemplate them for 22 years before they became clear, just like sitting in meditation for 22 years without realizing anything. Then, I met Luangpu Dunotulo, and he taught me the Dharma step by step. The last time I visited him, 36 days before he passed away, he gave me one final teaching. When you meet the knower, destroy the knower. When you meet the mind, destroy the mind. Only then will you reach true purity. It took me another 22 years to fully understand that teaching. So if you hear me talk and don't quite understand, that's okay. Just keep listening. One day, you'll get it. What I'm teaching isn't random. It comes from my teachers, from direct practice, and from verifying with the Buddhist scriptures. Theoretical knowledge and practice support each other. Theoretical knowledge teaches us how to practice. It includes not only the scriptures, but also the teachings of great masters. It is the knowledge passed down from the Buddha, the noble disciples, and the great teachers. Then, we put it into practice. When we practice, the results we experience will align with the teachings. For example, if someone meditates and believes that the mind is a permanent self, that's wrong. If they meditate and think Nibbana is a permanent self, that's also wrong. That doesn't align with theoretical knowledge. Theoretical knowledge helps us know the right path to practice. Practice helps us understand the teachings deeply. Studying alone leads to intellectual understanding, logic, and reasoning, but without direct experience, we don't see reality as it truly is. For example, studying the Buddhist psychology and philosophy can seem overwhelmingly complex. But if we practice, we'll see the higher doctrine in real life. When we meditate, we learn higher doctrine through experience, not by memorizing technical details, like consciousness lasts 17 moments, or there are 89 types of consciousness, 121 types of consciousness, 52 mental factors. We don't learn by reciting lists. We learn by observing reality directly. We examine greed. The scripture said that greed is this and that, that it has such characteristics and properties. Once it performs its task, the result will be this. And it requires certain causes to make it arise. I forgot the terminology as it's quite long. Each Dharma can be studied in terms of its characteristic-led fourfold. Take greed as an example. When greed arises, we feel a hunger for something we desire. The mind clings to and pulls in what it finds pleasing. Or, if the desired object is outside of us, our mind and body reach out toward it. So greed has the characteristic of hunger for sensory pleasure. Aversion, on the other hand, has the characteristic of rejecting what is unpleasant. When we encounter something we dislike, aversion arises to push it away. Contact with something pleasant leads to attachment, while contact with something unpleasant triggers aversion. We observe these mental states directly, and over time, our understanding deepens. The key is to realize the Four Noble Truths. Know what suffering is, and what you must do when facing it. Know what the cause of suffering is, and what you must do about it. Know what the cessation of suffering is, and what you must do to reach it. Know what the path to end suffering is, and what you must do to follow it. By gradually practicing, we learn from real experience. If we only study texts, but don't directly experience the truth, the Buddha compared that to an empty palm leaf manuscript, a book that holds knowledge, but cannot remove defilements. Such a person is called Potila scholar, who has not yet realized the Dharma. But does this mean we can reach Nibbana without studying at all? Yes, but only if we are a Buddha or a self-enlightened being. For the rest of us, we need to listen to the Buddha's teachings, learn from the noble disciples, and practice to truly understand. No matter how much we read or listen, we won't truly know until we practice and see reality for ourselves. Observe how the mind constructs experiences. What are the fabrications of the mind? When the body moves, it's because the mind commands it. Feelings of pleasure or pain are mental fabrications. Memory and perception are mental fabrications. The mind creates both wholesome and unwholesome states. The mind arises and ceases through the six sense doors. When we directly observe the mind's arising and ceasing, we see its impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. This is learning from real experience. One day, with continued practice, we will understand reality clearly. When that happens, we'll see that practice and study never contradict each other. We should respect the scholar monks because they preserve the scriptures. Some may not understand the deeper meaning, but there are also scholars who fully comprehend both theory and practice, like Somdet Prayana Sangwera, who mastered both to the highest level. Not all scholars fail to reach enlightenment. The real question is, do they practice?
Number 1. I practice Dhamma every day by observing my own body and mind. I feel there's a voice that says the body is breathing or moving. When the mind drifts off, I'm aware. A voice keeps talking, like, observe, anger has disappeared. Or observed alternately between the body and the mind. I would follow. Sometimes I'm worried that what I'm doing is wrong, or has the mind become concentrated, or is my mind at its base. The voice would then say, this is doubt, just keep doing good. May I ask Luang Po whether what I'm doing is right or wrong?
It's not wrong. Keep practicing. This is fine. When we first start practicing Dharma, the mind is talkative. It likes to narrate. Can you feel this? It takes many years of practice before it stops talking. So, don't command it to stop. Practice until one day it stops talking and becomes just the knower, the observer. Now it is not yet just an observer, so whatever it encounters, it will narrate. It's afraid of ignorance. Can you feel that it's afraid of ignorance, of not understanding? This is normal. It happens to everyone. Don't be alarmed. Whatever the mind is, just know. One day, it will stop talking. If the mind is still narrating, this is not yet the real thing. The mind is still influenced by thoughts. When the mind knows without thinking, that's genuine. But this cannot be forced to arise. What you are doing is correct. It takes time. Good work. Good work. Number 2. Do come back. Return to Earth from the Brahman realm. If you remain there, you might turn into a spirit of a child. I'm saying this because your top-notch hairdo is like a golden child spirit.
Number 2. For formal practice, I switch between concentration and breathing meditation and developing wisdom by contemplating on feelings and on the mind. Focusing on objects of consciousness that arise, I keep an impartial mind, neither feeling pleasurable nor painful, and use wisdom in seeing the three characteristics of existence. Am I walking the path or not?
Read the question again. One more time.
For formal practice, I switch between concentration and breathing meditation and developing wisdom by contemplating on feelings and on the mind. Focusing on objects of consciousness that arise, I keep an impartial mind, neither feeling pleasurable nor painful, and use wisdom in seeing the three characteristics of existence. Am I walking the path or not?
Don't keep an impartial mind, for it becomes impartial on its own with wisdom. If we try to make the mind impartial, this is fabrication. Can you feel that when you can fabricate constantly, you feel proficient, good, correct, smart. So don't keep an impartial mind. Know it as it is. Everything you have said earlier is correct, except for your intention to keep an impartial mind.
Number 3. I am aware of movements. I see the mind fabricating here and there. Sometimes it surges slightly and then fades away. I see the mind fabricate. Once I see it passes away, I don't do anything more than this. I don't struggle like I used to. I feel the practice has become easier. Please advise.
There's no advice to give. Keep practicing. Number 3. What you are doing is correct.
Number 4. I do sitting and walking meditation. While listening to your teaching, I'm aware of the in-breath and out-breath while reciting Putto. I'm aware of the body while walking, knowing the movements. I use the 14 hand movements when I feel sleepy. During practice, I sometimes close my eyes, and other times I keep them open. I change meditation objects often, to suppress the distracted mind. I watch the breathing, the body, the movements. The mind is rarely still, and is often unfocused. Please give me a meditation object which is suitable for me.
It's not good to change the meditation object too often. By changing often, the mind becomes distracted. Choose a meditation object and stick with it firmly, and you will see the truth of the mind. If you keep changing, it becomes more difficult. So don't use too many meditation objects. It's like when a doctor gives a patient too much medication. In the end, the patient dies of overdose. Each meditation object is like medicine. Taking too much is not good. If you change the object constantly, it'll be difficult to see. Choose just 2 to 3 objects is enough. Don't use too many or you won't be able to see the 3 characteristics of existence, but resort to thinking. The aim shifts to correcting conditions, the mind is restless, to this or do that. Be strong. Entrust wholeheartedly with your meditation object. Most elders entrust their lives with just reciting Putto, sometimes Putto and the breath, and nothing more. Entrust with your life and one day you'll be rewarded. Changing too often muddles the mind. What number 4 does is not wrong, just too much.
Number 5. I practice Dhamma in daily life. Watching the body and the mind at work. I see wholesomeness, unwholesomeness, desire, anger, delusion arising and passing all day long, depending on what influences the mind. Overall, I see this body and mind full of suffering. I see phenomena as they really are, more and more with an equanimous mind. I am afraid of rebirth. Please advise.
Your Dharma practice is good, in fact very good. Try to see that there is still a feeling that this mind is still you. Can you feel this? Can you see it? See that all other things are no longer you? Good. Well done. Keep knowing. Keep watching. Specifically knowing your own mind. It falls under the 3 characteristics of existence all the time. You practice well.
Number 6. During the day I try to be aware of the breath, of feelings of the body and mind. I enjoy and lose my mind to the mobile phone. For formal practice, I meditate in the morning and at night, using awareness of the breath and of feelings of the body and mind. My mind sometimes fixes focuses and sometimes is passive. When I encounter strange and phenomena I've never seen before, I often mistakenly think that I have reached enlightenment. Please advise.
Reaching enlightenment or not, you just look at your defilements and not the effects such as light, color, sound or flashes. See what type of defilement it is. Your mind is over-focused. You try to make it still. No. Number 6. Can you feel that your mind now and when you are not practicing are different? The mind now is a bit tight. Can you see? Like I said earlier, the method to see whether you over-focus or not is to see if it is tight and heavy. If this is so, then you are over-focused. Just be aware. By over-focusing, you are fabricating the mind. You want to be good, to be happy, to be calm. So you fix focus. Don't fabricate the mind. If the mind fabricates goodness, evil, happiness, suffering, just be aware, but don't interfere. Otherwise, if you fabricate the mind, it will become still. Just fine-tune this point. Overall, your practice is okay.
Number 7. When I heard your teaching about watching the mind, I got very excited. Since then I have been practicing formally, by doing walking and sitting meditation. I am better at watching the mind than the body, and I can see the knowing mind from my practice. But this knowing mind is not upright, radiant, or joyful. I'm not sure if I'm practicing correctly or not.
It's correct. However, whether the mind is upright or not is up to the mind. We have the knowing mind not for the sake of having it. We have the knowing mind so that we can see that the lost mind can be interrupted intermittently. Lost and then aware. Lost and then aware. Without the knowing mind, you'll only have the lost mind, and you won't see that the mind is lost all the time. Therefore, our aim is not to hold on to the knowing mind. Once we have the knowing mind, we don't intentionally maintain it. We put it to work to see that it arises and then passes away. All things, even the knowing mind, arise and pass away. Keep watching. Your mind now is not quite natural. Can you see that it's a bit stiff? Can you see that if it's heavy, tight, hard, dull or stiff, it means you are fabricating the mind?
Number 8. I make merit when there's an opportunity. I normally observe the 5 precepts. I observe the movements of the body to see how the body and mind work by themselves. When I have time, I practice walking or sitting meditation. I find that watching myself is better than watching the phone or TV, because the happiness is safe and beneficial to the mind. The mind no longer struggles unnecessarily. I'm diligent at my practice and am more confident to be aware directly. Is there anything I need to add to my practice?
Can you see that you are maintaining the mind, and the mind is still and focuses outside a little? Can you see that the mind is not natural? You fabricate the mind, making it calm, smart, and gentle. Don't be tricked by it. Watch the mind as it really is, but don't fabricate it. Here you are still fabricating it. What would happen if you don't fabricate the mind? It becomes impermanent, suffering, and not self. But the mind is still and unwavering. Don't let it be stuck in midair like that. Retreat. Breathe. Breathe hard. Smile sweetly. Nope, it's still stuck. Stick out your tongue. Still stuck. Can you feel that you are stuck to something? Can you feel that your mind now and when you are not practicing are not the same? If you can see that the mind now and when you are not practicing are not the same, then you'll see that the difference is what you fabricate. Think of the difference between when you don't practice and when you practice. The difference is what you fabricate with wrong view that to practice Dharma, you have to do this and that. Can you see the verb to do? To practice, the mind must be this way to be correct. Keep observing. Some meditation objects take a long time to understand. It took me 22 years to understand some of them. Be patient. What you are doing is good. This is all for today. I have been teaching non-stop every day. Still, some people complain that monks are lazy. They lie down in the morning, nap after meal, rest in the afternoon, and sleep.